scratch your
page erection.
Blind man bump.
A quick rub. A squeezy squeezy.
What bar is he?
A nogger.
Hulk Hogan and furiously mad.
Allegedly.
Rubbish. Ronnie. Garbage.
All right, you guys ready to rock and roll?
Mm-hmm. Steve, you're going to do the J impression this month.
Hello!
So, am I just really tiny, or am I a Care Bear, or what's going on here?
I was only doing that.
Do you want to do the intro? Sorry about that.
I know it's going to break down after two syllables anyway. Hello!
Hello and... Fuck off, it's nothing like that. Hello and welcome to OSW Review, the old school wrestling video podcast, filmed in glorious grapple vision and encoded with blast processing. Tonight we finish chronologically critiquing the Hulkamania era, pay-per-view by pay-per-view. It's the three biggest no-sellers in the podcast business. Road Warrior Ook.
Alright.
The Understeever.
Sorry.
And myself, Hulk Hunter. It's SummerSlam. Put that cigarette out. Greetings once again, Noggers. Happy days are here again.
Just eating £1,000.
SummerSlam 1992. The Coliseum home video kicks off outside Wembley Stadium amongst the fans, one youngster giving us a historic soundbite.
The Great Bullet's gonna win, whether he wants to or not.
Did you notice how many shell tracksuits were in this little clip, lads?
Well, I mean, did
90s England.
Yeah, and to be fair, here as well.
Yeah, we're here as well.
Yeah. Splice,
yeah.
We're basically the same.
Yeah.
Shut up. Cycle through footage of what Yanks recall of when they think of Britain. So boom, 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 boom. I'll edit it.
Where were my scones? Or teeth?
Or lack of.
You'll have to look in the big book of British smiles. They spliced that to some farting trumpets.
By the way, lads, who tried to get tickets for this? I did.
No.
Really?
Did you go to the show?
No, I tried. Like I said to me, wow, I need tickets for this. And she said she tried to get tickets and they were all sold out. I don't know.
I asked me man that and was like, no. So I was like, alright. Fair enough.
Yeah, it was straight up. I said, oh my god, they're going to England. Can we go? No.
Really?
Well, can we order it? No. So that was
it. I'll see you in 21 years.
Shit, oh well.
Yeah.
That's very sad. Like, none of us went to it. None of us even saw the pay-per-view either.
I just bought, like, WWF magazine or whatever.
Yeah.
Just caught up on the results.
Yeah. Commentators tonight are Vince McMahon, who last called the pay-per-view, episode 19, SummerSlam 1919.
I was going to ask you that, actually.
With the King of England, Sir Bobby Heenan, a stellar, massive crowd, legitimately WWF's largest crowd in history, 79,127 with 200 comps. By the way, Mania 29 did not come close, about 72,000. Average ticket price of £15.84. Kickoff time, 7 p.m. And they get over the tagline, the SummerSlam you thought you'd never see. Yeah, presumably they mean the IC.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Most English would have presumed that the Fed would never have a pay-per-view in England.
Oh.
So that's what they meant.
Okay. Do you mean see in person then?
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely not Savage and Warrior, because you know, we saw it last year. You'd expect to see that.
Say if the Bulldog never wrestled in WWF, do you think SummerSlam 92 would have been in the UK?
Definitely not.
If they didn't have a big British star? No. God, Jesus.
That's some fucking achievement by Davey Boy Smith. Then.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the show aired on tape delay 2 days later on pay-per-view, where 280,000 Yankee Doodles tuned in at home. Originally, it was going to be held in Washington, D.C. and have Brett drop the IC belt to Shawn Michaels, but it was changed to the UK for a couple of reasons. US numbers were falling. If you remember WrestleMania 8, they actually had to give away 15,000 tickets to fill the Hoosier Dome. And to further increase their exploding popularity this side of the pond, and to get some of that sweet, sweet merch money. Yes, the minute Brett found out that it was on in England, he pitched dropping the belt to hometown boy Davey instead, who could then drop it to Shawn later on. Vince agreed, and the main event was set.
Yeah.
If you were in UK or Ireland at the time, the Daily Mirror gave away a free SummerSlam 92 souvenir wall chart.
Nice.
Yeah, one of our listeners, Ship... Ship Daniel? Ship...
Please leave all of this in.
Ship Donald.
One of our listeners recalls they have different pictures of the wrestlers in the newspaper every day to fill it in with, and made his dad buy the paper daily to collect them all, and his dad never forgave him for it.
That's awesome.
As always, I'm watching the Silver Vision version, and the lads are watching the Anthology version. Welcome to OOC's Revenge. For the first time in OSW history, Jay watches the longer version.
Get in.
35 extra minutes. So,
oh, fuck off.
Holy shit. Yeah.
So I had 3 hours 22, you guys 2 hours 47. Why? The Coliseum home video release includes dark matches, plural, throughout the show that weren't aired on pay-per-view nor reinserted for the WWE Anthology DVD set, which means only I have seen these matches.
So, but they're not at the start of the show. They're interspaced?
Two at the start, one after halftime. Yes, yeah, so you'll just have to take my word for what the matches were like. They were shit. The matches were cut on pay-per-view for time constraints, aka they were too cheap to pay for an extra half hour or an hour block, and aired on primetime wrestling over the following months. So, yeah, just I don't know, sit back. Strap yourself in.
We're not allowed to sit back, Jay. We're not close enough to think about it.
My inaugural contest tonight is a dark match, fuck. The Nasty Boys, as we see the wonderful extra long entranceway with the royal blue carpet, awesome balls, who are tagging with the Mountie and Jimmy Hart with his awesome comedy heel song. Now, Rougeau sings it to the camera as Heenan whistles, and it's like, oh, yeah. Their opponents are the Bushwhackers. But it was
thank Jesus, yeah. This is a dark match.
I actually wrote, thank Jesus they didn't spring for Jameson's airfare. And the American flag waving Jim Duggan. Yeah, I'm already groaning at the thought of this match. And the jobbers proved me right by stopping and working the crowd several times. Vince barks, oh, talk about the Earl of Sandwich. As all three heels get squashed in the corner as Duggan helps super battering ram the heels and follow up with clotheslines. The match, it's like... Do you ever go to a circus out in Tala?
To the circus?
Yeah.
No.
Ever go to the circus? No. Anyway, it's very
similar. Absolutely not.
Anyway, this match reminds me of the circus because the performers look for approval after every move or trick. And they expect a round of applause. Like,
yeah.
You just fucking walk left to right. I'll clap at the end. But they all claps every 10 seconds. Fuck off. Best zone out and just look at the sea of happy, energetic wrestling fans. It really helps out this pay-per-view a lot. Just a massive, hot crowd. Oh, yeah. The heels work over Luke as they build being very generous, to a hot tag to Duggan. And then Owl hacksaw telegraphs Sag's top rope elbow and moves out of the way, so Sag's saggy hole drops onto Mountie instead, and Duggan picks up the win in 12-fucking-33 in a nothing match. 12 and a half minutes of the Bushwhackers.
Oh, God.
Shit. That's what you guys have to go through every time we do a show.
Yeah, I cannot stand them. Idiots.
The amount of Aqua Blue WWF foam fingers in the crowd, it's ridiculous. And when I saw it, it's like the amount of money you must have brought in with merch. Yeah. Like, it's like this is the one time wrestling fans can like not pay shipping and handling. Mm. So they'll get whatever they want. And that's true, they did. They brought in a staggering $1.45 million. Or the equivalent if every one of the 79,000 in attendance bought a t-shirt.
Whoa, that's amazing.
Alright, so in the second dark match of the night, hard cut to fucking yeah, Papa Shango!
No way.
The Shango Tango.
It's like the one guy that I've been waiting for.
Not quite as scary in the bright daylight,
yeah. Or in your late 20s.
Versus Ah Fuck Tito. This annoys me as at the end of their respective segments on the last episode, I do my little recap to see them off, and here they are again. I don't know, it's like if you're a party and you say goodnight to all your guests, and then, you know, half an hour later, it's like, hey, what's going on, man? Technically, they don't get a pay-per-view payday as they weren't on pay-per-view. Only the VHS release and subsequent airing on WWF television, Primetime Wrestling.
If you were dragged all the way over there, you'd be a little bit pissed off. You know, you're going on a dark match, you're going to get a quarter of what he's getting.
Maybe it's like, you know, just say 8 undercard matches, the worst 3 get cut.
Hmm.
You know, so I wouldn't tell you you're having a dark match before you come out.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Upon seeing Santana's fuzzy matador hat, Heenan says they should glue it onto Oakland's bald head. I thought it was hilarious. Bit of trivia, this match should have been Shango versus Hogan, but Hogan's gone. So plan B, Shango versus Tornado, but he's gone. So, arriba!
Always available.
The second dark match of the night starts off with the Haitian voodoo priest Pearl Harboring Tito, a plodding pace, a bloody punch-kick affair. When down, Tito moves his leg, signalling he'll move out of the way of Shango's splash. This is like a really basic, safe wrestling match, filled with clubs, slams, elbow drops. It's like, I bet Tito's really healthy. I bet you he walks around grand these days. Nayballer. Sir Charles cuts off Tito's firing up by throwing him into the turnbuckle, then hitting the inverted shoulder breaker and getting the win in 6 minutes. You've been shangled.
It's a nice move, by the way, isn't it? The shoulder breaker?
Yeah, it's really cool.
This match sucked sweaty balls. Finally, Steve and Steve, come on down. OC and V1 start the pay-per-view. Straight cut to the next match for the WWF Tag Team Championships. Actually, it's not. It's Money Incorporated, the white tuxedo-clad million-dollar man Ted DiBiase. Phil Barris ruins him by calling him the Milky Bar Kid. And IRS with Jimmy Hart. They're no longer tag champions, despite them having the belts on the SummerSlam poster and cover art.
No way!
Splice.
Way!
We'll find out later who's got them. Yeah, so it's Money Inc. versus the Legion of Doom, who come out last. Hawk, an animal clad in beautiful gold shoulder pads and on motorcycles, led by manager Paul Ellering and
Rocco, is it?
Yeah.
And they're both Muppets.
You know what would have been an amazing gimmick, lads? If Papa Shango made dolls of the Legion of Doom.
Like voodoo dolls.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And so, yes. You know, and so he'd have one doll and
he'd be controlling the Legion of Doom.
One up here and jump off and he'd be like, the demolition of my... Oh, whatever.
Or like, he could do like a, I love you, Hawk. I love you, animal.
Brilliant.
Yes, Rocco, a fucking ventriloquist dummy, a fucking hand puppet dressed like Shia LaBeouf in Indiana Jones 4. A 50s greaser with slick black hair, leather jacket and denim jeans. Holy shit, fuck is this?
Was this gimmick only invented for the WWF, or was he doing this shit back in the day?
Hawk, it's Vince. This... Your future. Yeah, no wonder Hawk failed his wellness test. They probably showed him the gimmick, the doll, and he went and got loaded. So despite the new mascot and boring heel manager, LOT still very over.
They were crazy over.
Yeah, Legion of Doom, what happened? Since the Road Warriors arrived, they've been unstoppable beasts, but in the span of two pay-per-views, they've fallen faster than King of the Ring Billy Gunn. Shoot-wise, McMahon thought they were getting a bit stale, so they roamed the scrap heaps back home in Chicago, coming across their old wrestling buddy, Rocco. Initially introduced as Freckles, the crowd reaction at the TV taping was so negative that it never aired. But McMahon pressed on, and another Jameson-level gimmick was brought into the world.
Oh my goodness.
On screen, Vinnie Mac ponders the net worth of DiBiase and IRS, despite IRS being a taxman and likely not rich. And Heenan proposes that when the Bank of England need a credit line, they'll call Money Inc.
I didn't like IRS's promo where he gives out to the English people for not paying their taxes. It's like, it's taken out for them, you fucking idiot. Like, they don't pay their own taxes in England. Ring the Queen and ask who's fucking got it. Like...
LOD don't sell for a bit, and Animal grabs Rotunda's tie, and the ref rightly counts to five. Very poor botch. Hawk tries a neckbreaker on DiBiase, but Teddy bumps and Hawk doesn't. Looks awful. And I wonder if any kids in the crowd saw that and they're like, I wonder if this wrestling stuff's fake. Yes.
Something, you know? Not quite right about, you know? This.
Sleeper hold to Hawk as the camera cuts to Ellering voicing Rocco, honking, Hawk, Hawk, Hawk. Hawk steamrolls until IRS gives the best fake out for a top rope clothesline in WWF history.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's like he was going to go for top rope clothesline and IRS waited till the very last one and went, ugh, and faked him out. I was like, that's how it should legitimately be done.
This is how it would be done in like the real world.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose the dropping 5 seconds there, I still jump over it. Yeah. You know? Yeah, good stuff. The heels cut Hawk off from his corner and force him to sell the fucking state of it. Did you see this?
Oh, I even hear the most abysmal selling ever by Hawk. It was shameful. Shame on you, Hawk.
Wasn't Hawk supposed to be fucked in this match?
Aha, there is no supposed to.
Yeah, right.
Got a bad case of disposals. No, Hawk was ballooned off his tits on Placidil, which is a sedative. And yeah, that's why he's selling like he's falling out of a pub at 3 a.m.
He's really bad in this match.
Yeah.
Strange to see LOD on the other side of the offense for once. Getting, basically, Hawk got his arse kicked for the most of the match. But the question is, considering how fucked he is, why do they have him in there for like three quarters of the match?
Because he's still much better than Animal. Animal's useless, lads. With his big roid belly on him. He's horrible looking.
A roid belly. Hot tag to Animal, who cleans house quite well and includes a great shoulder tackle. And despite the heels thwarting the Doomsday device, Animal hits a Samoa Joe scoop slam on DiBiase, picking up the win at 11:58. So, originally watching this, I thought they won the tag titles, but no, there are no titles to win.
You're a bit of an idiot, aren't you?
It basically had the same pattern as the Bushwhackers bout, minus the long, stalling bits. But I quite enjoyed it. Like, LOD were definitely on autopilot and basically walked through the match, but they're still really over, and they didn't steamroll Money Inc., and the crowd loved it. So, and I think LOD versus the Disasters would have been worse. So, yeah, thumbs up. What do you think?
It was a decent opener. Wasn't anything special. Like,
To be sure.
I thought Hawk sold for far too long. And then, you know, a bit of a Super Cena finish. He just hits the move and wins. But, like, not a bad match. Okay.
That was quite funny at the end, actually. When Animal was whipping DiBiase into the ropes. And Hawk was kind of standing in the middle of the ring in everyone's way. Animal pushed him out of the way and Hawk's like, hey, what the fuck?
Sit on it.
Yeah. Ruining my balls, man.
I can see. So Hawk, not quite bumping like a boss, bumping like a bean tin.
Bumping like someone from mid-level management.
So much like Jameson, Rocco is one and done on pay-per-views. He'd be tossed back into the garbage heap come September. And this is the end of the pay-per-view line for his ventriloquist, the Legion of Doom, as well. Between being outed as actually having failed a drugs test in a Penthouse article, poor booking, and with this Rocco shit, Hawk flipped his wig post-SummerSlam and straight after the show went AWOL with the Berserker and they missed their flights back to the US. And he wouldn't return to the WWE. Whoa. He'd go to New Japan and form a tag team with Kensuke Sasaki as the Hellraisers. Animal would finish out their WWF contractual obligations, adding Road Warrior Crush, that crush, to the mix. Orange mix. Until Laurinaitis' little bro was sidelined with a back injury. So Animal healed up by late 95 and signed contracts with his fellow Road Warrior to wrestle for both New Japan and WCW.
Hmm. Have you got anything on like LOD 2000 and all that jazz?
They were shit.
Correct.
So a pretty shitty end to their underwhelming 2-year WWF run. So as faces, the Legion of Doom couldn't wrestle the Rockers or the Hart Foundation, and they never had a proper blow-off with Demolition or with the Disasters. So why did Vince ruin the Road Warriors?
I don't know, was he pissed off with the drugs issue? Maybe Rocco was his way of getting them to quit so we didn't have to fire them or something, you know what I mean? I know.
They're arguably the most over tag team in the history of wrestling.
Yeah.
Not want to do anything about that? No? Mm. No? Just book them into the ground until they leave.
Also weren't made by Vince.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's like kind of DDP and Goldberg in the WWE.
And countless other Jesus, like how many other people has he done it to, like?
So if you're not made by Vince, just... Backstage, Mean Gene chats to the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. He says that he's not the only one disappointed he's not wrestling for Macho's WWF Championship, myself included. He touts that his personal consultant, Mr. Perfect, is going to be in the corner of either Macho or the Warrior. Oakland tries to drum up interest on which one has availed of Hennig's services. I don't care.
No.
Do you care?
Don't give
just
a bollocks.
Yeah, I couldn't care less. I thought this was a stupid storyline.
Yep. I see what they were getting at, trying to add some intrigue to the face versus face. It added no intrigue whatsoever. Couldn't care less.
I actually think that by the end of it, you know, we'll get there and we'll talk about the match, but I thought it ended up hurting the match in the long run.
Couldn't agree more, yeah.
Yes, both Savage and Warrior are faces, and why should they allow Flair and Perfect at ringside?
No idea.
Doesn't make any sense at all. No. No.
Throw to Sean Mooney, who's with a shadow boxing Virgil.
Kind of looks like he's punching Sean Mooney, do you notice that? It's kind of like, he's obviously not hitting him that hard, you know, because Mooney's just not doing anything. Virgil. Yep.
And, oh shit, he's wrestling Nails! Oh, yeah.
It's like my two favourites from the 90s. It's unbelievable.
Sorry, lads. Just, did you guys notice how badly Virgil needed to blow his nose?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm furious. I was like, blow your fucking nose, Virgil! Jesus Christ! A big shrone snuff that down.
He says he's a survivor, sucks up to the fans, and much like MC Hammer, he's too legit to quit. In from the AWA is the 6'9" Kevin Schultz, aka not that Kevin Kelly. Circa May 92, Nails here would be treated to ominous vignettes of an angry voice over scenic shots of a penitentiary. The man would become known as Nails, a man whom Bossman abused while in jail. He promised revenge on the boss man upon his forthcoming release. Why you'd still get released after making death threats to a former police officer is beyond me. Never mind. Nails showed up in June, bludgeoning and injuring the boss man in quite serious fashion. Wonderfully showcased in the September 92 WWF magazine. Splicey splice. And much like Sid, Nails would terrorise jobbers until he got the match he wanted. Steve, your boy.
Nails, well, the voice was awesome. I assume it was some kind of mixing desk doing it. It wasn't like his real voice, was it?
No, it wasn't. So Nails had this down-pitched voice, but they could actually do it live.
Well, who's the boss? Boss, no! Boss man, I'm gonna torture you for the rest of your life, and now you're gonna serve hard time, boss man!
Yes, I remember DX did it with Vince a couple of years ago when they were slowing his voice and making it go quicker and things
why,
like that.
Why don't you do it to our voices on this podcast? Like for a couple of minutes.
Well, how about like 5 seconds?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
cool. Put a promo on the boss man there for a sec, would you? Say, who's the boss now, boss
man? Who's the boss now, boss man?
Say it again.
Who's the boss now, boss man?
Same thing.
I'm the boss, boss man.
Wait, wouldn't that be Bossman talking to himself?
Say a line.
I'm the boss, boss man.
I'm the boss, boss man.
That's like a real... I'm the boss, boss man.
Boss man.
You can boss me, boss man. Say, who's the boss now, boss man?
Who's the boss now, boss man? I'm the boss, boss man. You can boss me, boss man.
But have you ever heard his normal voice?
No.
No, it's actually good. You know, it's just weird to hear it because it's a lot higher pitched. But it did kill the kayfabe in me because I was kind of sad that, you've got a regular voice, but splicey splice.
Let me tell you something, little man. Don't worry about where I got my money buried. One thing's for sure, I got enough cold cash stashed to get back in the ring and take care of that bump Tony Atlas.
So it's Nails who gets a jobber entrance, aka no entrance, versus Ted DiBiase and Virgil without Ted DiBiase.
Sorry, just Nails is an ugly man.
Yeah.
Some mush on you, Nails.
Alright, so he's still got his jumpsuit. Do you think he's like kind of part-time still in jail? You know, like Bossman's a part-time librarian, you know, part-time Mountie.
Doing part-time.
Part-time.
Part-time. By the way, you know that garb, his like prison uniform?
Mm.
Wouldn't that be government property?
You don't get to take it home. Yeah.
Maybe he got sent to jail for stealing prison garb. Yes, Department of Corrections inmate number 902714 is initially booked something quite like Taker, that he can't be knocked off his feet. Between his large frame and altered voice, do you think if booked right, he could have gone far?
Yep.
Mm.
Came far, like.
Mm.
Yeah.
Virgil and Nails are very awkward together, whether it's Virgil running wild or trying to string together a few moves and fail, they just default go back to the Nail choke spot.
Oh, Jesus Christ. We open up the match and within the first 10 seconds, 3 chokes in the corner.
Did you see his chokes as well? They're like this.
Yeah.
Because his hands on his like clavicles, like, yeah. It's not even close. Like,
it'd be slightly uncomfortable maybe, but mm-hmm. You know. But so then Virgil goes for a quick comeback. He can't knock him to his feet. And then just straight away, Nails like, no, I'm going to choke you again. So that's choke number 4. Virgil has a couple of near falls. Then Nails is like, no, I'm going to choke number 5 and 6. Nails then throws Virgil to the outside. Nails gets the heat, beats him up for a while.
And then quicker than a nun's first curry, Nails chokes out a standing Virgil and gets the win at 3:16.
Did he win by the choke?
Yeah.
So I was reading my notes there and it doesn't make sense. You can't win by a choke. It should have been a DQ.
Yeah. Unless it's your finishing move, then it's all legal. Pretty depressing. His sleeper hold was called The Good, The Bad and The Ugly.
Why?
Is he a fucking cowboy?
Much like Bret Hart, yeah. I don't know. Who knows why? Tepid reaction at best from the crowd, or were they, you know, stunned at the victory? Either way, the commentators get over his future match with Boss Man as he hoofs the candy striper out and poses with a nightstick for the highlight reel.
I thought that was the best part of the match, was the pose at the end.
Yeah, really shit match, really disappointed. I remember Nails being awesome, but he fucking can't wrestle to save his life.
He's a great character.
Yeah.
Terrifying for a child, you know what I mean? But yeah, once you see him out there trying to do moves and it's like, the most he's got is a clothesline and a choke. No good. No good.
Yep.
You should probably take back the comment where he could go as high as Kane. Probably not.
No. I'm like, nails with a bit of work, I'm sure it could have been okay as well, yeah. You know?
Especially coming into the new generation era.
Yeah. The opportunities were boundless. So.
It's like, okay, we got to push one of you. It's either nails or Mantor. Judging from this, you'd assume big things for Nails. Bossman would make his triumphant return in September and face Nails at the Survivor Series, where the citizen on parole jobbed clean in a poor nightstick on a pole match. Shortly afterwards, Nails blew up at Vince McMahon over his SummerSlam payoff, which was...
10 grand?
I'll say 30 grand.
Interesting. 8 grand.
8 grand.
8 grand.
Okay, I don't blame him, though. He's in a featured feud, and to me that... is, you know...
Well, this isn't the feud being featured.
Yeah, but much like Sheamus, Daniel Bryan, it's been...
Yeah, Nails blew up at Vince over his SummerSlam payoff, 8 grand, and even started choking him. But after seeing this match...
Did he work it or was it like a real joke?
He's in no peril. He even filed a police report claiming Vince sexually assaulted him.
Can you imagine Vince sexually assaulting a 6'9" monster?
Although everyone believes he was just trying to extort money from Vince, what with the sex scandal looming. So obviously enough, he was fired immediately. And there was ensuing lawsuits and counter-lawsuits, and Nails didn't get a bean.
Oh, I'm delighted. That's good. Being angered with your 8 grand payoff is one thing, but he raped me? Jesus Christ!
Who's the boss now, Vinnie Mac? He did keep the gimmick, though, as he show up in WCW next year as... Is another name.
Jails.
Wow, that's better than the prisoner.
Oh God,
Jesus!
And give me another synonym for WWN. He showed up as
the inmate.
Ooh, that's good.
The convict.
Boom.
Convict.
Hey, right there. Yeah. And New Japan, and then AWA as Nails with an S. Any more thoughts?
No, the match was bad, bad.
Outside Macho's locker room, Lord Alfred tells us he's been unable to confirm Perfect's whereabouts. So?
Would he not just walk around and be like, Perfect! Mr. Perfect! Until he finds him, until someone answers.
Mean Gene is with Sherry, who's dressed in some kind of white chandelier outfit and massive granny panties.
They're horrible, oh my God.
They recap the feud, Tom Muchley. 20th July Primetime Wrestling, The Hitman versus The Model. Whilst Brett is in Martel's Boston Crab, Sean attacks a defenseless Brett, causing a DQ and presumably denying The Model the IC belt. In the following weeks, Martel makes a pass at Sherry, who responds and reciprocates, playing up someone will leave SummerSlam heartbroken. But who sad is she on? She requested the stipulation that both men are so handsome, neither is allowed to punch the other in the face.
I think that's a phenomenal stipulation.
So the following rarely booked heel-heel contest is scheduled for one fall. Rick the Model Martel, dressed in tennis attire. The US Open will be airing around the same time. Got some amazing vignettes where he'd be like, I Navrata love it.
Practice. You know, now there's a fragrance that puts it all on the line. Arrogance. Whether it's a forehand, a backhand, every shot's a winner. Because women, Navrata, love it. Arrogance for men will make you the number one seed. One shot, and you'll be in the royal box. I don't know that.
I thought this intro and him doing the tennis stuff, I thought it was phenomenal. It just, he looks like a pretentious European shitebag. Model is fantastic. He looks like a, you know, those
Raffaello sweets.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like them, though.
No, they're coconut.
And he's taking on Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels with Sherry, who holds a dress mirror behind them.
Awesome gimmick.
Yeah. What? However, was it better when it was done by Narcissus?
As Shawn enters the ring, we see Sherry's arse. Oh, nice. She's wearing assless chaps. Oh, fuck yeah.
Maybe that's where Shawn got his chaps from all those years later.
Yeah.
There we are. Done.
Feels like this match was a fill-in-the-gaps booking so both wrestlers could get on the pay-per-view. The model starts off with a... No. Tito headlock.
Yeah, and so that... There's only one, though.
And the two exchange leapfrog and ducking spots. After a few minutes, the crowd decide the model is default face in the match. Shawn being thrown to the outside is a great excuse to check out Sherry's arse. And the model commends her with a hug. I wonder if they got married, Sherry would become Sherry Martel.
Very good.
Neither of them real name is Martel, so they're both just gimmick names. After showing both competitors are abiding by the no face punching policy, the lads exchange Oklahoma rolls, reversals, and tights holding, and equally rare, the ref correctly catches each rule breaking.
Brain says, Martel is gonna pile drive Sherry. Vince replies, not now. As in, bit of sexual innuendo. I thought that was quite...
You dirty fuck. Some more choreographed 50-50 booking, and it's like, wow, this is Shawn Michaels booking. This is his fingerprints all over those spots. Because the model would otherwise be quite a like punch-kick mat wrestler.
Mm.
And this is like jumping in flips and reversals, so... Yeah, Shawn, good stuff.
And it looks great.
I really enjoyed this part of the match. The opening 5 minutes, really enjoyed it.
More classic Vince. Apparently there are more moves in London, England than there are on any other planet. Bring back fucking Gorilla.
My goodness. When the two threaten to come to blows, Sherry climbs up on the ring apron and faints. A big, dirty Gilardino here. Slicey splice.
Slips it for Gilardino. Goalkeeper's out. Oh, Gilardino went down almost posthumously. And the referee's gone straight to his pocket here. That was an outrageous dive.
Yellow card straight away here. Martel starts giving chest compressions. I'm pretty sure it's time your license would be revoked.
Yeah. And like it looked like he was actually looked like he was doing it properly as well.
He was giving it a fair go anyway, yeah.
Shawn punches Martel and the two brawl outside. No guesses for the finish as it's a...
double count out.
And...
brawl to the back.
Oh yeah.
The Duggan special.
Mm.
We see Sherry spring to life as she was just feigning her fainting. Wurzel alert as the lads escort Martel to the back. To no avail as the wrestlers both comically want to carry Sherry to the back with no regard... for her safety as they bowl each other over.
It was funny, but it was stupid at the same time. It was like, it was panto, you know?
I felt sorry for Sherry. I mean, a couple of proper fucking nosedives.
Martel returns with a bucket of water and works the crowd 4 times to douse the heels, and he dumps it over Sherry, waking her up. End scene. A pretty hokey storyline finish that dragged, but it did work, largely thanks to the crowd, I thought. A light-hearted, slapdash storyline affair that did its job. Now, the audience were a bit thrown by the heel-heel dynamic, but they'd best get used to choosing sides tonight.
I thought it was a really, really good match, and I hated the ending and the shenanigans and all that shit. But the best Shawn's ever looked. Like, he did all sorts of good stuff with the Rockers, but now you can see what he's capable of singles-wise. So, yeah, pretty happy.
Pretty much the same. Action was great, but the story surrounding him was a joke and it was ridiculous. It was just silly.
Onwards and upwards for Shawn, who looked far better this time around against Martel as opposed to Mania with Tito. He captured the IC title in November before his career peaked with a feud with the returning Marty Jannetty. Shawn and Sherry would split when he used her as a human shield. Marty smashed a mirror over her instead of Michaels. But the storyline where she'd become Marty's manager was cut short when Jannetty was fired for a third time.
Jesus Christ.
Guess who she'd pair up with?
Narcissus.
Tatanka.
Oh, God.
Buffalo.
Yeah.
How does that work out?
Not very well. Backstage with the Nasties, who'd name-drop Warrior and Macho, and then the Natural Disasters, the comedy job team pressure Jimmy Hart into telling them they've got a title shot.
Jimmy Hart just goes, well, guess what? I got you a title shot.
What the fuck is that?
I have no idea. Mickey Mouse.
The third and hopefully last tag team match of the night is up next. It's the Beverly Brothers, Bo and Blake, versus the Natural Disasters, Earthquake, and that blowhard tugboat. The purple capes are out first, and the genius has a poem where he name checks a fuck. No. 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 Face Natural Disasters are out next, who fucking hell now have the WWF Tag Team Championships. Off pay-per-view, off television, of course. The Disasters won them on a house show in Worcester, Mass on July 20th. Another typical Hulkamania era off pay-per-view tag title change. So, yeah, with regards to house show title changes, over 99.99% of your fans don't get to see the title change. Wrestling fundamentally asks you to follow superstars' careers on TV. So if suddenly there's a change off camera, it's like a little slap in the face saying, hey, we did something without you, just take our word for it. What of it? Mm. You know? Mm. It's a break in continuity for your TV audience. I don't want to drop a Friends reference. But like, if you were watching an episode of Friends and Ross and Rachel start dating, and then you watch the next episode and they're married, and Laura Alfred Hayes says, oh yeah, they got married. Yeah. What of it?
Yeah.
So what? Yeah. Do you know, it's stop it.
What are you doing caring about your big mark and all? Just making you feel bad for actually being a huge fan.
It's annoying because I can't splice anything. So, yeah. Just have to take my word for it.
Splice some Friends.
Maybe you can take an example from Joey or how I Met Your Mother or something.
The
like
negatives
that.
Were all burnt. They're all incinerated.
Or man.
OSW review. I'm sure it was just to keep the house show attendance up, but yeah, fuck off. So it's the Disasters versus the Beverlys. The match is faster paced, which tells me it won't last long, but it actually went 10:21. Same booking as the previous two tag matches, take my word for it, why not? As after the faces initially clean house, the heels isolate a face, whether it's Luke or Hawk, or in this case, Andy Fordham, aka Tugboat, until the finish. Fuck off, D-Lo. Try harder. We see the same botch that befell LOD and Money Inc. as Tucker bumps way too early on a neckbreaker, and Blake is really pissed, and he just puts his boot on his face, starts spitting. Same visionary tags deny the faces, and Blake uses Genius Scroll, but can't properly capitalise.
Earthquake does one of his tantrums, but the ref doesn't sell it like Herc would.
I was on the man, Hercules is probably like back in his gaff somewhere, and I was like, whoa! What just happened there, lads?
Quake gets the hot tag, and his cleaning house involves a hip toss, a belly to belly side suplex, a standing pump kick, a super hoe train, and a power slam, placing Bo for a giant whoopsie. The crowd respond really well, and I won't credit Tug Job, but Quake makes for a surprisingly good babyface.
I thought Quake was amazing in the last like 90 seconds of this match. He looked like the best wrestler in the world when he's hitting the Bimmy to Jimmy and all the suplexes and the splashes. So I was like, holy shit, this guy's awesome. Mm-hmm. Also, fuck Vince and his British puns. Oh, look at all the people smiling like 80,000 Cheshire cats and their scones and their tea. Just not funny at all. Just terrible, terrible observations.
Hitting a 10 on the Wendy Richter scale. Disasters pick up the 3 and a successful title retention.
Any of you know that there was an earthquake felt in Dublin this morning?
Really?
Yeah. I thought
you skipped chilies for breakfast.
It came from Wales or something.
Typical.
The fucking Welsh. Yeah.
Did it come from that part of Wales? What's it called? Saint.
We've never slagged Welsh people before.
No.
There you go.
You may as well be slagging us just with slightly funnier accents.
Sure, sure.
Terrifying us with their close harmony singing. Yes, disasters, enjoy it while you can, mates, because Money Inc. would win the titles back in October on Wrestling Challenge. Mm. This match, better than expected. Bo and Blake held their own as well.
I thought this was a fucking terrible match. Just so boring, no? No?
I'd be slightly more on your side. I thought that the crowd were great, that they were really up for it. Earthquake was awesome. But I thought that the match was too long and boring, and I hate the Beverly Brothers. I think they're terrible. Like,
the crowd, loved, as you say, loved the match. Just goes to show how fucking appreciative.
They're up for everything.
Yeah, that's it. Just, you know, if you want a good crowd reaction, have a pay-per-view in England or Ireland or fucking Germany or whatever.
Be somewhere where you don't go every six bleeding weeks. And
Just don't have a comedy show in Ireland.
If you're Mick Foley.
Yeah, stay out.
We still haven't given out about that enough.
Speaking of which, the Kiwi cunts are backstage with Mean Gene. They run through some awful kindergarten-level humour. Lord Alfred stands outside a door with a Warrior logo drawing, bezeled with a shitty, nearly empty marker pen. Covertly, Alfred says he's going to breach his own code of ethics. He tries to barge in, but the door is quickly shut in his face.
Well, I must say,
it's very awkward and it's really funny because he opens it and someone kind of like pushes it back. He calls that a shocking, vulgar act of rudeness. Fucking hypocrite. Unbelievable.
The fucking cheek of Lord Al, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This cheeky cunt is trying to barge in on someone's room and then he gets upset when he's not allowed.
I think that was intentional, though.
It was good. Like,
it was kind of pulling the piss out of himself, almost.
It is the most pretentious we've ever heard him, and he's a pretentious lad.
You'll forgive us for taking a moment or so out of SummerSlam to tell you about our Monday night football. We're in Norwich. Norwich against Nottingham Forest tonight.
So if you're watching this Monday afternoon on pay-per-view in Ireland or the UK, premium channel Sky Sports took a break at this point so Richard Keys and Andy Gray could tell you about the football match Norwich versus Forest. That's not so bad until you found out that they actually cut out Rebo versus Crush from the pay-per-view.
Holy shit! Although Andy Gray... What a shite bag. Take a boo, son! Take a boo!
Well, take a bow, son. I mean that. Take a bow.
I hate that, man.
So next up, we got Doink Bra! You making kids cry, bra? It's the Repo Man.
You fucking hate him.
It's the Repo Man versus Crush. Crush was last seen jobbing to Tenryu and Kitao at WrestleMania 7. Fast forward to Springtime 92, Crush was repackaged as a surf dude with attitude, kind of groovy, laid back moods. Clad in
Sky above, sand below.
Good vibrations. Clad in neon spandex and brown hair with highlights, Crush here. He was born in Kona, Hawaii. They took his name literally as he'd physically crush random junkyard objects and coconuts with his bare hands. Hence, his finisher was the old head squeeze. As a poor wrestler, it's one of the safest finishers you can give a man. Hold his head and sell. And the move would be bestowed upon the Great Khali 15 years later. So it's the dastardly heel, the Repo Man, versus Kona Crush. He's dressed in a blindingly 90s singlet of orange, yellow and purple, and let's not forget the Hawaiian's Kentucky waterfall. So Steve, what bar is he?
Well, Jay, I've actually got a couple of things for this, because this is quite the common colour scheme in the confectionery world. So... number one, he's a double decker.
Yeah.
Number two, he's a fruit salad sweet.
Yeah.
Number three, he is a dib-dab. And last, and possibly the most out there, he is a mango and passion fruit bottle of Fanta.
Excellent. And he's also a can of Orange Crush.
Yeah, I think it goes without saying, really.
So, the demolition explode here at SummerSlam 92. It's Demolition Smash versus Demolition Crush.
Shit, I just got that right now. Sorry.
Sadly, neither men's WWF history is mentioned on screen, so this fact doesn't add any interest.
Are you
to the
fucking
match.
Serious? He's got the same name!
Yeah,
he does. Jesus Christ!
They've taken the demolition off of
him. And put in Kona.
Yeah. Fuck me.
The match itself is a squash. It just gets over Crush's strength with power moves. The Coliseum home video trims the match down after Crush misses a top rope knee drop straight into the no-sell finish. So, did I miss anything?
No.
Did you guys notice the size difference between these two when they were in the tag team?
Well, Crush is always taller and slimmer.
But he looked huge. I just didn't realise he was that big.
Well, Repo must have lost like 60 pounds or something.
Yeah.
But he's still like 280 according to his brain.
Surprising big pop when he motions for his finisher. Just, not wanting to go for the pin, Crush puts on the head vice, which is the cranium crush or the Kona clutch. And despite Repo turning into a still photograph, he doesn't sell or look like he gave up. Crush gets a submission victory at 5:41.
I'd say Smash is pretty pissed off because, like, he was obviously higher on the totem pole in Demolition, and you know he's on his way down. Crush is on his way up.
Well, yeah. Without Axe, man, these two guys are just not good enough for me. Especially Crush, but
especially Smash.
So we got a simple squash match, a Crush match, to push Crush and get over his new gimmick. I think it was the right decision, considering Repo is now a comedy heel jobber on par with the Mountie and the Nasties.
Yeah.
It's the final singles pay-per-view match for Repo, who'd leave this time next year. Gimmick-wise, both men had very storied careers, so Darso started out as a Russian sympathiser, Crusher Khrushchev, in Mid-South, then Demolition Smash, then to the Repo Man, and then to WCW the next year. Steve, what match am I going to reference?
WCW?
Come on.
What match do I reference all the time?
Oh, fucking not Big Black Bully Cock.
Big Black Bully Cock.
Does he bully people with his cock? That went better than I hoped. To Blacktop Bully.
That's it.
Versus Dustin Rhodes, King of the Road. From there, he became Stuart Payne, a heel golfer, a parody of PGA golfer Payne Stewart. Mr. Hole-in-One would offer victory to their opponent if they could put a golf ball in the ring, and then he just Pearl Harbored them when they tried. He managed to keep a paycheck with WCW until the end of the millennium, so good for him.
Holy shit!
Jesus.
That's fucking 8 years away. 8 years of fucking guaranteed contract. Nice!
Crush, brah! What about Crush? Alright, lads, I'll start you off with, can you name all of Crush's gimmicks? So he started in the Pacific Northwest as the American Ninja, and then he moved to the WWF as
Demolition Crush.
Okay.
Then there was Kona Crush.
Fantastic.
Then there was Evil. No, there was something before Kona Crush.
Yeah, he was with Legion of Doom as
Road Warrior Crush.
Excellent.
Shit. Then he was Evil Japanese Sympathizer Crush.
That's exactly what he wrote.
Excellent.
Beard, face paint, wore black.
And that kind of makes sense though, because of the whole Hawaii, Japan, America, Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Pearl Harbor! Gorilla Monsoon cracking one off. If only they could literally hang from the rafters. So in 1995, he actually went to jail for purchasing steroids and having an illegal firearm, which played a role in his returning gimmick, which was...
Biker DOA.
Nope, before that. The Nation of Domination Street Thug Crush.
Ah, yes. And then, same gimmick as DOA, though.
Different vest.
You had to break it down to 243.
A different cut.
Different fucking cut. Different lapels. Then in WCW...
Oh, can you explain DOA?
Leader of a biker gang, basically.
Can you say Disciples of Apocalypse Crush?
Okay, Jesus. Disciples. Disciples of Apocalypse. But I can't say it.
That's it.
No, I clearly can't say it, Jay.
DOA Crush.
Yeah. Disciples of Apocalypse Crush. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, that is it.
Then he went to WCW.
He was NWO T-shirt Crush. Then he was the Kiss Demon before they gave the gimmick to Dale Torborg.
So there was a crush break.
And then he teamed with Brian Clark as
Crush.
As
Chronic Crush.
Snagging the Observer's worst tag team in 2000 and 2001. So after getting the boot from WWF for stinking up the joint around Invasion Time, snagging one's worst match of the year, Chronic went to Jarrett's WWA and then All Japan before Crush restarted his boxing career. That he never restarted, he was injured before he could have a fight, and was Randy Savage's bodyguard for a bit before passing away in August 07. So, favourite crush gimmick?
Definitely this one. Calling a crush.
Jesus Christ. DOA, probably.
Jay?
Ooh, you asked me to pick between 93 bra and 97 bra. I love Kona Crush. I get so much enjoyment out of it.
Bra.
Bra? This is why...
Making kids cry, bra!
So, one last time, Macho's mid-card match harkens our halftime special.
Yog Break Questionarium.
Which Muppet did the Legion of Doom find in a scrap heap in Chicago?
Now, for the first time ever, Games Master has disassociated himself from the abject depravity of our next challenge. So while I wind my way back up to the playing arena, I hand you over to our guest announcer, British Bulldog.
This is the British Bulldog of the World Wrestling Federation. It's your chance to take part in the rustle and bustle of Super WrestleMania for Super Nintendo systems. You've got to do anything to win. Backdrops, body slam, suplex. You've got to have your opponent kissing the canvas because the first fall decides the victor. And heed the words of the British Bulldog. Nobody likes to lose. I've said my piece. Back to you, Games Master.
Now the question for the Outbreak Questionarium is, which Muppet did the Legion of Doom find in the scrap heap in Chicago? The answer is... Doink, bra!
You're making kids cry, bra!
I like it. I like it a lot.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are just moments away from tonight's main event. We are just moments away from the World Wrestling Federation Championship match between the Macho Man Randy Savage and the Ultimate Warrior.
And I'm the World Wrestling Federation Champion! And you're not!
Oh my goodness!
Time for your main event for the WWF Championship. It's Randy Savage versus the Ultimate Warrior in the Battle of the Non-Hall of Famers. Prove me wrong, Vince. Mean Gene fills us in on the title feud, Tom Mutchley. After a Warrior-Macho confrontation, Flair and Perfect stir the pot, telling both men one's cut a deal with Hennig to be in their corner. highlights from primetime wrestling, where we get the standard Saturday night's main event build-up of opponents at the pay-per-view team beforehand. Dissension, smellness. What do you make of Warrior's flesh-coloured outfit to make it look like he was nude?
Feels like he's wearing nothing at all.
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all.
Stupid sexy warrior. A state of warrior in his onesie. Dot, dot, dot. Missing the roids.
I think he looks fucking awesome.
The blonde heels beat down on both men, both Savage and Warrior, immediately killing any intrigue, showing us that their claim is a lie. They haven't struck a deal with either one. So despite them showing their hand, WWF still push that one of the faces is in cahoots with Flair and Perfect. What a shit build.
Makes no sense.
Yeah.
Unless one was a fake beatdown, but they weren't fake beatdowns.
Okay.
That's a dangerous territory, doing fake beatdowns. That's...
Why is Ric Flair not in the title match?
Aha. This is before the days when there were triple threat matches.
Yeah, I understand that. But like... Where feuds just one and done back then, like, was there no, like...
Rematch.
Yeah, like...
That's exactly right, yeah.
It's just shitty.
Flair should have a rematch, but he doesn't. He actually mentioned it on the pay-per-view. I'm surprised and disappointed I don't have it. I'm sure many other people would rather see me take on Savage.
You know who sold out.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't.
Was it the Warrior? Come on. It was the Warrior.
No, I didn't say that.
I didn't say that.
You
nodded.
I did not. This is nodding. This isn't nodding.
Let's go up to Howard Finkel. We're going to find out very shortly.
Savage. Well, never
what? Wait a minute.
I didn't say Savage. I mean, never mind.
The contest scheduled for one fall is for the World Wrestling Federation Championship.
So this is a legitimate double main event pay-per-view, as in the UK... Brett versus Davey was marketed as the main attraction, but in the US, the following contest was. The challenger, the Ultimate Warrior versus the WWF champion, Macho Man Randy Savage, sans Liz. Both are basically clad in what I'd describe as if a packet of highlighters exploded. Macho's the brighter of the two, being luminous pink with tie-dye yellow striped trim. A rather difficult what bar is he awaits Steve.
There's far too much colour going on.
I don't have any bars for the...
Oh my god!
I can reuse the fruit salad bar, but you know...
Controversial?
You don't really want to.
Wasn't there...
Rhubarb and custard.
Our friend Calrissian Steel writes, he likens it to a zebra fruit stripe bubblegum.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can just splicey splice, Jay.
Not bad.
Yeah,
not bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a bit green.
Which, like, oh,
the yellow orange.
Warrior's ring tights, a scantily clad, freshly shaven Giant Gonzalez.
Yep.
Yep.
It's nighttime now, as it was daytime starting off the pay-per-view, and dusk with Crush. Oh, lovely. Although Warrior's gimmick is an untamed beast, his weakness being that he's easy to outsmart, since Macho laid out this match, so much like WrestleMania 7, Warrior's booked to be more intelligent, so he'd have a greater array of moves and wrestling smarter, like quickly countering the sleeper hold with a jawjacker.
I would like to counter this point in saying when Macho came out and they went face to face, Warrior mouths the word respect and spells it, and I quote... R-S-E-P-C-T.
Get out.
Sold out. Wait a minute. Warrior just said... Respect. R-S-E-P-C-T.
The two fall over each other as Vince preemptively says, oh, look at that manoeuvre. They just repeat the spot correctly. Thankfully, Vince doesn't repeat the comment. Powerman Helwig gives us his first ever bear hug into a pin.
Bear hug.
Macho turns the tide with a shake, rattle and roll as we hear the crowd boo. The crowd have decided that Macho is the default heel in this face-to-face matchup. Now, Warrior zeroes in on Macho's lower back, but Savage turns the tide as he low-bridges Warrior. They start brawling outside as the ref starts counting. I was like, oh, fuck. Thankfully, that isn't the finish, but it does herald the closing sequence as Flair and Perfect come to ringside.
Sorry, did you notice that the crowd booed Savage for throwing Warrior over the top ropes. It was just, was that really heelish in 92?
Bill Watts would have been
cream, so Bill Watts going mad. Sack him! He's out! He's out!
Dubspot double clothesline later, and Perfex swipes at Macho, implying that Warrior has sold out.
There was a good ref bump. Hebner was down for about 5 minutes. He just got pushed over.
Irish whip reversal, and Earl takes a ref bump, and then another, thanks to a high knee. Gorgeously safe delayed pile driver by Macho.
Mm-hmm.
And the heels beat up Warrior, implying Macho sold out. Or, as we all expected and knew, neither have sold out, obviously. Vince does his best to play up the storyline. So Macho hits a top rope elbow, but can't get the three. Warrior kicked out late, and it looked awesome, as opposed to kicking out at one, which he usually does. Warrior hits the WrestleMania 7 running shoulder block. Vince Mike stops working, but that's not that noticeable. Press slam, but before he can hit the devastating splash to the lower back, Perfex swipes at Warrior, but Flair connects with the chair. Somehow this chair shot knocks Warrior unconscious. And although Randy realises that this is Flair's work, he reluctantly motions to accept it and elbow drop the Warrior, but then eventually decides against it, staying face by turning to Flair and jumps to axe handle him. Flair telegraphs it and hits him with a chair. He swipes him good.
This is a nice spot, actually.
Injuring Macho's knee. The ref fast forwards his 10 count, and after 26 minutes, 15 seconds, we get a bullshit 10 count, so neither face jobs. The heels work over a prone Savage, and Warrior shoos them away. So both stay face, and the status quo is maintained. They got through the pay-per-view without jobbing.
Very good.
The crowd somehow cheer for the countout victory for the Warrior, but more boo for Savage retaining. So, a very messy finish to an ultra-heated match filled with many main eventers. I thought it was odd, because whenever people come down to ringside to interfere, it's usually at the finish, but, like, Flair and Perfect were present for about half of the match. I really annoyed Flair didn't wrestle on this pay-per-view, and the focus of this match was neither wrestlers in the match.
Mm.
So,
or a wrestler who's fit to wrestle.
Who was Banyan?
Perfect. It was back to Neckard, isn't it?
Oh, right.
All of the build is about him.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You're building up to someone who can never wrestle.
He's like, oh, don't worry, boys. You can both have me. So overall, despite the overbooked, inconclusive finish, I thought it was still a really great match. It felt like a really big-time affair. The crowd and Vinnie Mac being so invested in the storyline and match really helped.
Well, I think it was really, really bad. I thought it was incredibly slow. It's interesting you made the point about Vince being into the match, because Vince being into a match makes me hate him even more as a commentator. This pay-per-view, he's in full swing. You know, with, oh my God! You know?
That's exactly it. Oh my God, that's...
You're hired!
Together, meanwhile, on the outside, Mr. Corbin and Ric Flair are trying to annihilate the WWF champion. They're trying to destroy Randy Savage.
That was spot on.
What part of the match is that?
It's from minute 1 until minute 2 hours and 40 seconds.
Yeah, I think Vince is such a shill. Like, he's got that disingenuous American corporate yes man fake laugh.
Big know? Time, yeah.
And he might, incredibly, he might know even less about wrestling than Monsoon.
Hmm. Yeah, I thought that the match was good. The storyline leading up to the match was absolutely awful. The booking of the match was okay, but it's just... Imagine if this match was the actual main event. You'd be furious. You'd be so angry that you wait 3 hours and you get no payoff. you don't know where you're going to next month. Is it still going to be Warrior Savage? Is Flair coming in? Is it going to be Perfect Warrior? Perfect Savage? Flair Savage? Flair? Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. I have no idea what's going on. So I don't know who to cheer for. I thought that the action in the ring was fine. But overall, when you add in the booking and the finish and everything, it's a thumbs down, I think.
Shocking. Mm. Shocking. I don't think Warrior's smart enough to turn heel. Like, to be in collusion and hatch a master plan. He's a beast. Like, he can be a cunt, and that way he can be heel. But I don't think he can join forces and make a faction with Ric Flair. Macho's still pissed off about those pictures, so of course he's not in cahoots yeah. with you.
Yeah, like,
stay away from Miss Elizabeth!
When Flair and Perfect came down, I thought, oh, thank fuck. You know, the match is going to heat up. It's going to be a little bit interesting. It took the emphasis off the match, which was good in a way because the match was shit, but bad in a way because this is your fucking world championship match. And for most of it, you got two lads on the outside, you know, fucking around. So pointless, completely and utterly pointless.
The two try to do the face-face, pass-the-torch moment a la WrestleMania 6 with Warrior and Hogan or WrestleMania 8 with Bret and Piper.
Doesn't someone have to fucking win for that to happen? Jesus Christ, like, that's 101, isn't it?
But this one, yeah, definitely far weaker thanks to the bullshit finish. Warrior helps a limping Macho Man to the back and Savage tussles his hair in appreciation.
His lovely hair. Lovely hair.
Rumours were that Savage was supposed to turn heel and Warrior refused to job clean to Savage. That's complete horseshit. They felt that Savage, who had already won the belt at Mania, versus Warrior would be a bigger draw than a Flair rematch. How wrong they were. Besides which, there were only two top babyfaces left in the company and headlined separate house show circuits, so no. Post-match, Gene angrily berates Perfect. He really stands up to him. And there was no deal. Hennig says that Plan A's a secret between himself and Flair, and Nate mentions Plan B, which is presumably a tag match between them. Guess if this match takes place or not. Yep, nope, it didn't. Warrior's strop would continue and would leave the WWF before the Survivor Series. On the last show I mentioned in WrestleMania 8 was the blow-off of Flair versus Macho as Macho had moved on to face the Warrior. But I had no idea Flair provided all the drama for this feud. Post-SummerSlam, Flair would resume his feud with Macho, relieving him of the WWF title the day after the pay-per-view aired, a month later on Primetime Wrestling TV taping. In Hershey, Pennsylvania, Tuesday, September 1st, Nate would work over his knee, Razor Ramon kicked his leg out of his leg, and Savage passed out due to the pain and actually lost via pinfall to a figure four. Flair would drop the belt on a fucking house show. Hooray, hooray. Perfect would turn face just before the Survivor Series and would send Flair back to WCW after besting him in a Loser Leaves Town match on Raw the 25th of January 1993. And so ends the WWF run of Ric Flair, one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, with a house show and some TV bouts. Well done, Vince. We return to another fucking dark match. Not before the pay-per-view starts, but one after one of the main events. The Berserker takes on Tatanka. Buffalo.
Jesus Christ.
Again, this match fucked over my little career retrospective of Tatanka, as in the last episode I said Tatanka went on a 19-month winning streak. So no great surprise how this one pans out. Anyway, we start off with a crisscross and a standstill. Despite Tatanka being much smaller, they booked Tatanka on a par power-wise with Berserker, which is very, very odd. Kicked the boot, splits by the Viking. Then Heenan calls his furry boots Hair Jordans.
Oh,
that's
nice.
That's very good.
Yeah.
That's very good.
The two repeatedly do the brawl to the outside spot to run out the clock until the finish, which is three tomahawk chops, chop, 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 and a Samoan drop. The American War Eagle picks up the win to complete the trio of instantly forgettable dark matches of the night. So Vince gets over the official attendance, 80,355, which is not too far off. It's actually 79,127.
I was looking up, not because of the podcast, just because I was interested. So Wembley, I think the first match was the FA Cup final in 1923, I think. And because it's such a massive, enormous event.
Like standing room, everyone standing, oh, man, 30 people get killed.
Like it was worse than that. There were so many people and there was no regulation, like people just jumping over the turnstiles, people working there were like, fuck it, I don't care anymore. That eventually, estimates of about 300,000 people in there, they all essentially got pushed onto the pitch. So the police had to push them back and kind of hold them back. So they were all around the touchline for the entire match. People standing on the fucking touchline. Amazing. The pictures are fucking amazing. So there you go. That's a bit of Wembley trivia for you. And so what's this, like 70 years later? It's already fucking run down to fuck. Like,
yeah, it looks rough, doesn't it?
It does. It does. It badly needed to be demolished.
Yeah.
It's a shame that demolition had broke up.
Bruh.
With OOC and V1 back on board, we're in the ring with Harvey Whippleman. Since Sid threw a strap shortly after WrestleMania, he has a new client. The Lord of the Jungle, the Ugandan giant, Kamala, with handler Kim G, played by Steve Lombardi, a.k.a. the Brooklyn Brawler.
Is that guy in the WWE Hall of Fame?
No.
You think
well, he works at it. Kamala had been in the WWF in the early to mid-80s, but never on pay-per-view before tonight.
When Whippleman is introducing Kamala, it says, from the dark continent of Africa. Stealing all my lines. Oh, but Kamala gets in the ring, Herr Finkel does this little gay run, like he's trying to run away from him. Brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. Have a little
awesome.
His opponent is The Undertaker, hitching a ride to the ring on the back of a lovely British hearse. Great stuff.
Yeah, it was really cool.
It's not WrestleMania, so no streak on the line, but I'll tell you who's winning this one.
From Death Valley, weighing 328 pounds, The Undertaker!
Well, you look at that. No, you look at that. I don't like to look at that. You look at that. He's going to need a bigger box if he wants to put Kamala in there. He's going to need a bigger hearse.
Kamala is betrayed and holds himself like a comedy jobber, a dim-witted foreign savage, punctuated by over-the-top selling. It's a far cry from the quite similar on paper Umaga.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
Taker was going for old school. I think Harvey Whippleman bounced off the ropes and Taker nearly fell and he had to do some fucking commando roll to like save his life.
Taker runs through his signature arsenal. Primary school, chokeslam, Kamala jumps for it, thank you. Flying clothesline, and when he goes to Tombstone Kamala, Kim G runs in for the DQ loss. Post-match, Kamala's shitty offense leaves Taker laying so they can continue the feud later on.
Kamala's splashes were shite. Oh, yeah. In like the type of splash where you absolutely bottle and you land on your feet and then just kind of flop forward.
Boss man, yeah.
He hit two of them and just no heed for the beatdown, but a massive pop for the sit-up. Like.
Yeah, typical Monster of the Month Undertaker stuff.
Yeah, it's such Vince booking, isn't it? He does it over and over again, and you know, you've got your face and you've just a fucking legion of different heels for him to take out. Worked for Hogan, it's doing for this guy, Cena, them all.
The Dead Man immediately no-sells with the Mike Myers spot, gets up, his theme plays, and everyone heads backstage to end this forgettable segment. Taker and Kamala would wrestle again in WWF's first ever coffin match with a casket at the Survivor Series, with Taker steamrolling Kamala in 5.5 minutes. In 2009, James Harris, aka Kamala, revealed a litany of poor paydays in his WWF run. He said that he made $13,000 this night, whilst Taker made $500,000 for the same
match.
Bollocks. Bollocks.
Typical wrestler inflation. Taker wouldn't have come close to 100k, so probably 50 to 75. He'd turn face and Reverend Slick would try to humanise Kamala, teaching him things like bowling.
He is human.
Maybe civilise him.
Well, that's not like, I think at one point Brain says at least Kamala's alive compared to The Undertaker. Pretty sure Vince says, if you want to call that living.
Man, there's a lot of nasty little Vince snippets, isn't there? Oh my goodness.
The character itself died a quick death. Recalling his tribal gimmick, he said, it might have been a little bit of a disgrace to the blacks, but, you know, I was just concerned about making a few dollars, but I didn't want to hurt no nationality.
Aww.
So it's time for the UK main event. Mr. Oakland, play us in. Here comes the Mooney. Sean Mooney interviews the hometown hero, Davey Boy Smith. He blandly lists facts. Tony set up this match. Brett is the Intercontinental Champion. He's my brother-in-law. Well done. And hopes their families can reunite after the match. God, he's horrendous on the mic.
Yeah,
but
it's his best,
in saying that,
it's his best promo by far ever.
Best promo of his career.
Yeah.
It's not saying much.
No, but it
but
is.
Your best is your best. Like,
we both have it written down, dickhead.
Therefore, it is right.
I believe there's no bull in this British bulldog. Hopefully his opponent can save this. Cut to Bret Hart.
Jesus.
Hitman failing to understand when Smith says, when we're in the ring, I don't know you, reminds him that he introduced Bully to his wife and blames him for all of the family tension over his title. The build-up, and seen here in the promos, Bulldog played a straight babyface, while Bret would intentionally whine and talk up how ungrateful Bulldog was, becoming a subtle heel, ensuring Smith would be babyface on the night. That's pretty great. Although the promo was bad, the point he got across worked very well.
Well, again, I have, in inverted commas, interview with Bret, by far and away the best he's ever done. This is his best promo.
Two hearts beating as one.
Bret is clearly at his best when he's whining. Just like in 97.
It's because it's the closest to the truth. You know, like to say that your best character is you, just turned up.
Yep.
Bret's a moan.
He's a whiner.
Bret is a moan.
But he's right about giving out about Bulldog saying, when I'm in the ring, I don't know you. Surely you'd use it to your advantage. I know what kind of moves you do. I know how you work. I'm getting in the ring waving at Bret.
Bret, look at me, Bret.
It just reminded me of you talking about Bret's promo in the last one, and it's like, all right, you talk to Bulldog, and you turn to talk to Bret, and he's like, oh, I don't want to talk. Imagine if that was your promo. I don't want to talk. Our final match of the night is delayed as, much like current day Mania, we have a musical interlude. The Balmoral Highlander Bagpipers play Scotland the Brave with special guest soloist Roddy Piper.
So it's just that you call this a musical interlude.
It looks like he can actually play the bagpipes, but it sounds pantomimed because he can't stomp in place as he's busy fingering his bag.
Hey!
Roddy had left after Mania, so this appearance was a nice surprise.
Nice payday, though.
Hmm.
The storyline here is, although both are babyface, the matchup and title at stake will potentially tear the entire Hart clan apart. Bruce Hart sided with the Bulldog, as, oh, splice it, he has an awesome, fumbling, jealous promo where he sided with Bulldog, saying Bret's ego will be his undoing.
Is Bruce Hart the one that stamped on Vince?
Yeah.
What a hero. Yeah. One of the legend. Oh, my God.
Yeah, a lot of people have been asking me about the big showdown between my brother-in-law, Davey Boy, and my illustrious brother, Bret, the Hitman. We all started out in this ring. I may be better than anyone could probably assess the matchup there. They're both great fighters, but there's one slight difference, and I think it might come to play in this match. Bret's ego is so damn big that he can't get a grasp of reality. And if his ego gets away on him, as it seems to be, he might be in for a hell of a surprise. Davey Boy is not chopped liver.
this guy did an interview with Meltzer and Alvarez about maybe 3 years ago, and it's the worst interview I've ever heard in my entire life. It'd be well worth going out to find.
Hi, everybody, and it's Give Me 5 Stars with Dave Meltzer, and I'm here on the line with Bruce Hart. Oh, I don't want to talk. Owen and Stu side with Brett, and the Hart women couldn't take sides. In the middle of it all was Diana Hart, Brett's sister and Davey's wife. Sean Mooney's in the crowd with happy-go-lucky Diana Hart. She blandly recites generic phrases with a natural scowl on her face.
Jesus Christ, boys, she looks like... You know, like the film about the nuns in the convent with the evil witch nun who, like, molests them all with a big scowl on her face?
Nuns just, on the run?
No, it's
the Magdalene Sisters.
The Magdalene Sisters, yeah. She just looks like she should be in that movie with that face. Whenever one of the girls does something wrong, she can just be like... It's like, she looked like the most grumpy... Yeah.
Say what you want about this interview, because I'm sure you hate it, but it fucking feels real.
I think it was.
Like, maybe that's just, maybe she's fucking...
She's completely out of her depth.
Yeah, well...
As maybe, a normal person
but she's
be.
Just a normal person, saying whatever's in her head. And that's what you would do in that situation. She's not overplaying it.
She'd be at ringside during the match and, you know, be gone quiet and be like, stretch and breath.
Mooney helps her out by interrupting. You can see where Davey and Brett got their speaking prowess. Bulldog is out first, led to the ring by Union Jack flag-waving Canadian-British boxer, how very apt, Olympic gold, Commonwealth gold, and undisputed heavyweight champion Lennox Lewis. Diana finally cracks a smile from her stone-faced frown when Brett comes out. Both men receive wonderful standing ovations, a hero's welcome to Wembley Stadium, and the rightful last match on the show.
Slight booze for Brett. Slight booze.
Standoff, and having a chat, and headlock encounters, and having a chat to kick us off. Some excellent reversals here. Brett's leading this match, but Bulldog's pulling his weight too. It's remarkable, really, as Davey was a train wreck at the time. Rehabbing his injured knee, he had spent the prior week smoking crack cocaine with Neidhart. And it was up to Brett to pull him out of the dirt and into the biggest match of his career. Bulldog was only back from a 6-week suspension and was bumped off the Mania card due to time constraints, but he finds himself in the main event of SummerSlam. Prior to the contest, Bulldog confessed to Brett why he'd been ducking him all summer and had forgotten all of his spots. But Brett replied with, "Davey, just listen to me and I'll carry you."
I don't know, I thought Bulldog pulled his weight more than Brett spoke, will have you believe, like, you know, because it's Brett.
Amidst the air horns, the crowd deafeningly chant for both Brett and Bulldog. Smith delivers a perfect Crucifix pin, as opposed to this Tuesday in Texas, it was a load of shit.
Yeah, that's exactly what his Crucifix pin was amazing. It was so quick, it was slick, wasn't it?
We cut to shots and picture in pictures of Diana's face. Please don't. Her concerned face is just a blank scowl. It's like, if I didn't know better, I'd say she hates wrestling.
Yeah.
For a third time tonight, the crowd is asked to pick sides, and they chose the hometown hero, the British Bulldog, made apparent when Brett need Bulldog in the meat basket. As the match progressed, it became readily apparent that their default rest hold, the armbar or headlock, and later the sleeper, was used so Brett could communicate the next sequence and even what facials to make. Brett takes control as the crowd become increasingly hostile towards Brett. I thought this was awesome. He acknowledges and disapproves, but like doesn't bait the crowd, so he's like a face in heel territory.
It was so subtle, wasn't it? Just how he changed all of a sudden, and he went from doing moves to doing a move, then stopping for a few seconds and giving a bit of the and just the crowd were fucking loved. They were eating it up. He had them in the palm of his hand.
Hitman tries some kind of amazing top rope Tanahashi style sling blade spinning sit out sleeper slam. But really, we're giving him far too much credit. Mm-hmm. Bulldog was just out of place for the plancha and Hart was trying to save it by grabbing his head.
Sit out. Sleeper slam. I love it. I'm going to make a t-shirt of that or something.
After a Russian leg sweep, Smith does the Warrior Special, readying his hands to kick out before the one count. Brett leans heavily on headlocks and sleepers, which is far more noticeable, but acceptable knowing Bulldog status. So, I don't know if you'd notice this if you're watching it first time around.
I went back in and I was sitting there and I spent the entire match looking at Bulldog and I was like, I expected him to be running into the ropes wrong, getting things wrong, fucking up. He, like, a stupid look on his face. I just didn't see it. I just saw Brett leading a match. And a damn fucking good match as well.
Despite samey rest holds, they absolutely never lose this rabid crowd. They were into it from bell to bell. Brett considers being dumped out of the ring, but executes the V1 special, tying himself in as many ropes as possible and never takes it
down. He's amazing at it, isn't he? He's
fucking like Spider-Man here.
Yeah.
Finally turning the tide, Bully hits a perfect delayed vertical suplex and running power slam. But for the first time in WWF history, Brett kicks out. That was fucking huge. But I have to say, it's the thing with Joey Morella here, the referee. It's like the winning three count usually has a slower three count. So it's like a more definitive victory.
Yeah.
But he actually just counts the same as a normal two.
Yeah, it was quite like the Sting Hogan one. You know, the one from Starrcade 97. It felt like a normal count. Also, speaking of refs, where was Lego Ref? Where the fuck was Lego Ref? He was awesome last month.
Didn't spring for the airfare.
Diana, for all her sour faces and everything, I actually thought that she did a fairly good job of making you kind of pull for Bulldog a bit more. There was a bit in the Brett beatdown where he's absolutely bashing him. You know, he's picking him up by the hair and shit and fucking him down onto the mat and it just flicks quickly to Diana and she's got like tears in the corners of her eyes and I was like, that's fantastic stuff.
The two build to the finish. Brett's beautiful bridging German suplex gets a two count, as does Bulldog's superplex. And then there was an amazing, gorgeous transition from a dub spot double clothesline into a sharpshooter.
Mm-hmm.
Brett says he got his wife Julie out of bed one night to see if it would work.
That's awesome. That's so fucking awesome.
That's straight out OOC's playbook. Bulldog fights on and catches a rope break. And we got an amazing pun spot. Much like Axe and Smash with the axe handle smash, and Crush with the head crush, Brett hits Bulldog with a bulldog.
Yeah.
spot Vince again and going, you know.
Your Vince is amazing.
A lot of that going on. For the second time in the pay-per-view, he calls a reverse atomic drop a reverse pile driver.
God, you couldn't get more opposite, could you?
No, no.
Blocking Brett's sunset flip and denying us a main event Aloha Arn. Bulldog catches Brett's legs and pins Brett 1-2-3, and in 25:09 he wins the WWF Intercontinental Championship. In his book, Brett said that Vince didn't want to know the finish and to surprise him instead.
Oh, that's cool.
And surprise him he did. A finish he'd lifted from Leo Burke. So we'd see a similar finish again with Brett and his brother Owen at WrestleMania 10. And he counters the victory
roll.
As with Macho and Warrior earlier tonight, no theme plays as we wait to see how the competitors will react post-match. Brett initially walks away from an outstretched hand from Bulldog, garnering a wave of boos, but the two shake hands and embrace to a massive pop. Then Diana enters the ring and scowls them out. She hugs her husband and brother and the three celebrate. She seems a little happier with Brett, and I reckon that's likely due to what he's done for Bulldog in the ring tonight. In-ring pyro goes off, not as nice as WrestleMania 8, but goes off, and that seals out for the night. A wonderful Christmas time finish to cap off a big-time, historic, milestone pay-per-view.
I think it hurt again, the fact that the music didn't play instantly. I know the crowd popped huge, but it just didn't have that same gravity when you hear the music hit after the pin. It was
totally great.
Yeah.
So the Intercontinental Championship main events this pay-per-view. Yeah, Matt, look how important the IC belt is here. It's brilliant. The prestige of winning this match, like prominent title changes like Steamboat winning the IC belt at WrestleMania 3, they go down in history as the ones to remember, not some impromptu title switch on TV or a fucking house show. So a Hall of Fame worthy performance by Brett, turning, oh, that's a bit mean to say shit into gold, but Bulldog was out of it, and it was a storied match that crescendoed past both men's finishers and kept the crowd at fever pitch for almost half an hour. It was amazing. So between the psychological battle at Mania with Piper and this tonight, Brett's definitely being groomed for a future championship reign sometime down the road. And Brett credits his performance tonight with opening the main event door for him.
It'll come as no surprise that I thought the match was terrible. And, you know, by now, you obviously both know what I like in a match. I don't, you know, care about psychology. I want to see spots, I want to see excitement, and this had neither.
A highlight reel.
Yeah. Or even just a fast-paced, free-flowing match, like we were seeing earlier on with Michaels and Martel. That kind of style. This doesn't interest me. It felt like the match was booked to be long because of its significance rather than because it was going to be good or it had a lot to it, because the match didn't have a lot to it, move-wise. So this is the first time I've seen this match. I was expecting a lot from it and it didn't deliver.
I thought this match was absolutely brilliant. Both men were amazing workers in it. The crowd were up for absolutely everything, and, you know, obviously if this match wasn't in England, you couldn't do it. Like, well, obviously you could do it, but it wouldn't mean as much. It made a huge difference. But, yeah, overall, really enjoyed the match. Yeah, fantastic, great main event, and I'm so glad that this was the main event and not the world title match.
What did you think of the match? Or are you gonna...
I was going to say, it was great. It was noticeable that Brett had to stop the match every few minutes to call the next sequence, but highly forgivable because the match itself was great. And it did build and build and build, and they did their finishers and went past their finishers and had an unexpected finish, and it was an amazing hot crowd for the whole 25 minutes. So yeah, big win, definitely. So the Intercontinental Championship closes the pay-per-view and the peak of Davey Boy's career.
At the end, finally Vince's real voice comes out at the end.
What a summer, Sam! You
know? So I was like, yes, he's back.
He's back.
But there's no bull in this British bulldog.
Digaboo!
Digaboo, son!
There's 80,355 fans here from Wembley have looked on. So long, everybody, from London, England.
What a summer, Sam!
SummerSlam 92, it brought in 280,000 US buys. A disappointing number, a good 125,000 buys lower than last year.
Internet, you see? Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't blame the internet or the newspapers because they're both in their infancy and neither would have gotten the results out in time to affect. But you can blame a few things, okay? So the lack of star power, essentially. There's so many people that left after WrestleMania 8. None more so important than the WrestleMania 8 main event. Both Hogan and Sid are gone. And you can also blame the sex scandal and the steroid scandal. And also there wasn't much interest domestically for Brett and Bulldog. Bulldog was a massive draw in the UK, but nothing in the US. It might as well have been Brett versus the Berserker. Like.
And rightfully so, because Bulldog was never good enough to be top-line wrestler, like.
Yeah, the two main event matches are face-face, which is intriguing for, like, veteran fans, but for regular fans, it's not half as interesting as the definitive heel-face matchup. For normal wrestling fans, that's a terrible idea. You should kind of tell them who to like, who not to like.
And
so there's a clearer storyline here.
And is this the first time they've done face-face main event since Hogan Warrior?
Yeah, since Hogan Warrior, yeah. But that match there, that didn't do well.
Hogan Warrior?
Yeah, it did 200,000 less than the Mega Powers breakup a year prior.
Okay, well, that's like the peak of the WWF's creative power ever. Like,
So despite giving WWE their biggest audience in history, they're unlikely to ever hold a Big Four pay-per-view in the UK again. The biggest reason is the time difference. So East Coast is 5 hours behind and West Coast is 8 hours behind. So a 7 p.m. start over here is 2 p.m. in Florida and 11 a.m. in California. The other reason is, despite live versus tape Raws not seeing a difference TV ratings-wise, WWE believe it'll make a dent in the pay-per-view audience and are unwilling to test it out. Attitude Era-wise, they do UK-only pay-per-views like One Night Only, Rebellion, Insurrection, but they didn't sell that well, maybe like 50,000 buys, anyway, that kind of thing. Nowadays, WWE decided just to go on tour twice a year and do a round of TV tapings instead. Yaboo, sucks to you, a Fritzy. So, overall, what do you think of the show?
I think if you took out the main event, I think it would have been a horror show. Sean Rick Martel for the first 5 minutes was good, but then the afters were fucking awful. Didn't enjoy Legion of Doom, Taker, Kamala. Crush Repo was not good, but it wasn't awful, brah. Yeah, so honestly, I really felt that the crowd and the main event were the only saving graces of this show. And as luck would have it, they were both pretty exceptional. So it's probably still worth your while watching the show, but just don't expect a good show.
What do you think, Sue?
Yeah, I didn't like it. HBK Martel was quite good. The rest I didn't like, but loved the surroundings. Awesome crowd, having it at Wembley, you know, and properly outdoors, as you like the daylight going to nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
It looked fucking brilliant. Wembley could do it. Obviously, it's a bit of a shithole, but there was so much crowd, it didn't really matter.
No Owen Hart on the card. He was out with a knee injury, and Neidhart was busy smoking crack. Yeah, dark matches dragged down the card in both pacing and match quality. I imagine the pay-per-view in America was a lot tighter, but if you're saying it's a bad show, then imagine my show. Descent of the Dead Man. Taker peaked with winning the title at Survivor Series, but since then he suffered numerous knocks, so dropping the title a week later, quickly turning face, wrestling a departing Jake Roberts, and now battling poorly gimmicked big men for the next, like, 6 years? So Kamala, Johnny Gonzalez, Yokozuna, Damian Demento, Undertaker, Bundy, comma. So, Fox. Yes,
long stretch.
Jeez, see you in the Attitude Era, man.
Yeah.
Great fun to finally see Krona crush bra and nails in action. I really enjoyed the LOD match, despite how poorly they'd been booked in 92. And I thought it was a really great WWF title match, but it was sullied by messy overbooking and overlapping Macho's feud with Flair. I reckon if you were watching the TV every week, the storyline would have been doled out perfectly, but it's still a bad storyline. And in an isolated setting, it's really bad. Mm-hmm. Excellent performance by Brett, but Bulldog, he did his part too. He looked fantastic. And the man of the match tonight was the crowd. They're not smirky or sarcastic, just a sea of happy, emotionally invested, positive wrestling fans. And that's fantastic. So overall, I thought it was a really great show. Thumbs way up. Shocking, really. One big question, did you miss Hulk Hogan?
No.
I'd probably know, but it did feel like there was something missing. I don't know. It's hard to say, I can't definitively say.
Marty Jannetty.
Alright, so that closes the Hulkamania era. Give you a quick update on steroid business. So WWF brought in their wellness policy in late 91, but it wasn't until early 92 and their testings that people got suspended. So Hawk, Tornado, Snuka, Sid, Davey Boy. Others left directly because of the testing idea. Oh, I'm not taking a test. Warlord, Hercules.
Warlord.
Jake Roberts, besides WCW knocking on his door. Post-SummerSlam, both Warrior and Bulldog were fired in November 92, so before the Survivor Series, because they attempted to purchase HGH from Europe. So human growth hormone, though. Just ask this scientist. He'll tell you that HGH works similar to anabolic steroids, but you couldn't test for it at the time. It was only when blood testing came in that you could. The evidence against Warrior was flimsy at best, but Vince wanted him gone again and used it as an excuse to fire him. So why'd you hire him back? Things would be different.
Money.
Yeah. So we've been putting it... Well, I've been putting it off for a while, is just explaining what happened in the sex scandal. And along with the steroid scandal and then Hogan lying on Arsenio's call and all these wrestlers leaving was, you know, one of the big reasons for WWF doing such bad business. So I'll go through it real quick. Tom Cole, a WWF ring boy, filed a $1.6 million lawsuit against Titan Sports, WWF's parent company, road agents Pat Patterson, Terry Garvin, and announcer Mel Phillips, claiming sexual harassment, like Patterson would walk up and jangle his balls and Garvin would offer to blow. He was 15 or 16 at the time. So immediately Patterson, Phillips and Garvin resigned from WWF and only Patterson was rehired. The WWF sexual abuse involved other ring boys and other wrestlers stepped forward to say that they would get employment or push in exchange for sexual favours, including Randy Orton's uncle, Barry O, Tom Hankins, Paul Roma, Billy Jack Haynes, and announcer Murray Hodgkins, who is full of shit. WWF employee Rita Chatterson claimed Vince McMahon demanded sexual favours while she was riding in his limo, and when she refused, she was fired. But nothing ever came of this. Much like Vince. This was national news, spurring many talk show segments like Larry King Live, Geraldo, and Phil Donahue. In the end, Tom Cole's lawsuit was settled out of court for $150,000, as well as the two other ring boys. He even got his job back in the WWF, and even tried to help out Vince, being a plant during the Donahue show. It never panned out, as the panel knew he was back with Vince and was going to just make everyone else look like arseholes.
Cheek of him.
This massive negative press, alongside the steroid scandal, blatant lying like Hogan on the Arsenio Hall show, and the mass exodus of stars, caused the major downturn in the WWF's business. Things would go from bad to worse, as in 94, Vince would go on trial for possession and conspiracy to distribute anabolic steroids. And despite Hulk Hogan testifying against him, Vince was acquitted due to lack of proof. And now we can cut to an exclusive sit-down interview about the sex scandal.
Somebody had to take the babysitter home. Then I noticed she was sitting on her sweet can. I grabbed her sweet can. Oh, just thinking about her can, I just wish I had her sweet can.
So, Mr. Simpson, you admit you grabbed her can.
What do you have to say in your defense?
Mr. Simpson, your silence will only incriminate you further.
No, Mr. Simpson, don't take your anger out on me. Get back, get back! Mr. Simpson, no! Dramatization may not have happened.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's not... I think it's important, but it's rather boring, isn't it?
It's all hearsay. You know what I mean? Like, who knows what happened, what didn't happen. I think it's pointless even talking about that shit.
Can I jangle your balls?
Give me $150,000. You can do whatever you want to me, boss.
Let's haggle. So before we tell you what's happening in episode 30, let's take you to the wrestling is...
Awesome!
Segment!
Awesome!
The Bell from Hell versus the Dove from Above in a one-soul anything-goes matchup, Jess.
It doesn't get any better than this, Mean Gene, but everyone knows May-Eye's got a bad ticker. So Las Vegas odds makers have listed him as a 25-1 underdog. He doesn't stand a shot in hell.
Well, I'm not so sure. Remember, his opponent is a woman. Nice tit, sure. But a face I wouldn't want to wipe my feet on.
Ever hear of a paper bag?
My money's on May I.
May I!
And they wonder why priests never get married.
They're here!
We have the Bible. We have our faith. And as a backup, these beauties.
That's an illegal foreign object!
Jesse, what do you know about fairness?
I'll show you fairness!
Oof. Are you just about finished?
That is disgusting, Mean Gene. I have never seen a move like that in all my years of wrestling.
Let me. Oh, is this cool or what?
It's the Conalingus move.
Why don't you take a lick of this candy stick, you sissy boys?
That's disgusting.
Who needs steroids?
Steroids aren't used in wrestling anymore.
Or any less.
That'll do it for this week, folks. SummerSlam 92 is in the books. Good stuff, man.
Yep.
As episode 29 comes to a close, we're done with the Hulkamania era, but OSW review will continue. Episode 30 is up to you, the listener. Our next review will be decided by fan voting, so head to our Facebook group at oswreview.com and vote on what you want to see in our poll. Majority wins it.
Don't put any wrestling in it, because that'll win.
What's any wrestling?
Any wrestling.
Can't find the any wrestling.
What do you mean?
Don't put any, A-N-Y, right. Space, wrestling, space, in space, the space, hold space, the backspace dot.
Asking people if we want to review, like, this week's 2.5 men. Like.
I said men.
Yes, so go vote on the poll. Majority wins it, unless you're listening to this in the future, in which case it's already been decided, and save some of that moon money for me.
Nice.
So remember, you can catch all of our episodes free of charge in an IMAX flavored 4:3 full screen at oswreview.com. And while you're there, leave us a lovely message, why not? So it's a goodbye from Mr. OSW.
Maybe.
And V1.
Take a boot.
And myself, Jay Hunter. And remember, a winner is you.
Hey.